Accession number 30284, reel 2.
Right, next bit, reel 2.
Well, we got there. We were billeted in rooms as undergraduates, I think about four in a room. It was freezing cold. It was a very cold winter. And we had no fires at all. It was, in some extent, extremely uncomfortable. I don't know what it was like for the undergraduates. Maybe they had proper heating, but we didn't have any at all. And for the first week or two, we did nothing else but drill. It was the usual business of a corporal saying, "My God, what a bleeding shower. Well, you may have broke your mother's heart, so you won't break mine. He gets fell in over there. Tallest on the left, shortest on the right," or something like that. "And what I want to see is a living statue." But we were all young, fit men, and we thought it was amusing. We really did. We thought, "Well, you may have broke your mother's heart, you won't break mine," all that sort of thing. You know, and he was all right, and we didn't dislike it. In a way, we ran about and we marched about and went on route marches and all that sort of thing. We were given machine guns to dissemble and put together again and so on. And lessons started on all sorts of subjects relating to flying.
With the drill, how much time of your day would you spend on drill to start with?
Well, I think we spent 3 or 4 hours every day drilling, marching, double marching, running round and round the quad, going on route marches, and so on. And learning how to salute properly, longest way up, shortest way down, all that sort of thing. It was all right. And also, I was with people I liked. We all liked each other. We were all much of a kind. Probably came from more or less the same social background, I suppose. You know, we mixed up well together and made friends with each other.
Did quite a lot of your fellow recruits at that time have the same sort of interest that you had in sort of aviation as well?
Without doubt, we all did. We were all under training pilots. We wanted to get away from that initial training wing onto elementary flying training. But we had to go through this routine to begin with. We knew about it. It didn't worry us at all. And the ground instruction was pretty good, I think.
Can you take me through that, the subjects and what types of things you were doing at that stage?
I must admit I can't remember them very well. But there was airmanship, there was gunnery, meteorology, navigation. Yes, a lot of navigation came into it.
So what degree, because obviously given what you were later on in your career, what degree of navigation were you learning to kind of standard or level at that point?
Oh, quite a lot. Quite a lot. We were given protractors and various instruments to... and for what it's worth, on the ground subjects, I excelled. I think we were given examinations at various points, and I always seemed to come top of them, or very near the top. So I did very, very well on the ground subjects. They weren't difficult to me at all. I lapped them up.
Can you explain to me the sort of basic principles of navigation that you were learning at that stage?
Well, it was geometry. It was a question of wind speed and direction, track and direction, course and direction, corrections for magnetic variation, for deviation in the aircraft itself, and so on, how to work it out, how to plot it on a chart, and so on. And I don't think we had charts at that stage, but we did learn the basic principles. I wanted to learn avidly, and I was enthusiastic about lapping up all I could on all these subjects. I was also very keen on the armament side too. I had never fired a machine gun, nor did I fire a machine gun when I was there, apart from pulling the bolt back and clicking it forward and so on. But we did fire rifles on a range, I remember that. I was quite a good shot as a child. I had fired air rifles a lot, and I'd fired a 2-2 rifle a lot. I fired left-handed, but of course when I got on the range, they made me fire right-handed, so I wasn't too good. But with a machine gun, fortunately, it didn't matter whether you were right-handed or left-handed, you held the thing in front of you. But I didn't fire any machine gun at that stage. We just learnt how to load them and how to disassemble them and put them back into action. All that sort of thing we learnt.
What type of machine guns were you dealing with at that stage?
We had, I think, a Lewis gun, 303 Lewis gun, and we had a Vickers K gun. And we learnt how to operate those, how to take them apart and put them together again, how to look after them as a sort of airman's friend.
You mentioned airmanship. What was that about?
Well, airmanship was some procedure in flying. I suppose flying in V formations and so on and so forth, how to inspect the aircraft, how to treat the aircraft, things of that nature. I can't remember all that much about the subject matter there. It sort of blurred in to what I had to do later on, I suppose.
How were your days divided up at that stage?
Well, we had to get on parade at 8 o'clock in the morning. There was always an initial parade, and we had to be there smartly dressed and properly shaved and all that sort of thing, and having been to the ablutions. And we were drilled there maybe for, I suppose, 2 hours, and then we had a short break for tea, sort of naffy break, more drilling. And then, I suppose after the drilling, we had the lessons, and they went on for the remainder of the morning and in the afternoon. But the situation changed day by day. We did have the weekends off, but we didn't have much money, and there wasn't much to do in the evenings. I mean, we didn't drink or smoke very much in those days, and we didn't go out and enjoy ourselves a great deal. We also had to study. It was a bit like being at school. You had to have homework. You had to study not only in the classrooms, but outside the classrooms as well, in your rooms in the evening. And we talked a lot and joked. It was quite a happy time. We were laughing and fooling about to some extent, imitating our corporal, pretending to be him. We thought it was amusing. We didn't think it was brutal. I don't know what people think about it now, but we thought it was amusing.
You mentioned your accommodation, but what about eating facilities? Where
did
you eat?
Well, we did have a dining room, and we ate there. The food wasn't too bad. Because we wore white flashes in our forage caps, which distinguished us from other recruits. It meant we were a certain status. We were aircrew status, under training, pupil pilots. And that put us in a different category. And we had, I think, better meals than the average airman would have had. The food wasn't bad. It was pretty sparse. I mean, things like egg and bacon were rationed. And, you know, we didn't have all that we would have liked. I suppose we were all quite hungry to some extent, and we might have gone out and bought the odd donut here and there to supplement our rations. But yes, it was an active life and not too bad at all.
How long did that period continue for?
Well, this is the problem. Once we finished the course, there were no places for us at EFTS, and we went through the entire course all again, up to a certain point. They started the course all over again. And we were at this stage, we were getting very bored. But then something happened. And what happened was, of course, the German attack in the West. And that put us in a different category, because we were all posted away immediately. And we were posted to various airfields as ground gunners. And that seems rather strange, because we'd never fired a machine gun in our lives. But I was posted to this place, RF Upwood, which I think is in Huntingdonshire, with one or two others. And we used to take turns in sitting in a gun pit with an old Lewis gun. We knew how to handle a Lewis gun. We knew about deflection firing and all that sort of thing in theory, but it had no real practice in it. But if an aircraft had come along, I suppose we'd have more or less known how to fire. I mean, I could shoot a bird out of the sky. I could do that with a rifle. But I didn't have any practice with a machine gun. I longed to fire the thing, but didn't. And there was one raid, actually, on the airfield. I remember, I certainly wasn't in the gun pit at the time, but a stick of bombs was dropped across and part of the gun pit was demolished.
Can you describe the gun pit to me, how it was set up on the airfield?
It was partly dug into the ground and it was sandbagged all the way round. And there was a single Lewis gun on a sort of tripod. And if there had been a raid, we'd have been expected to fire at the aircraft.
How did the Lewis gun operate? What did you have to do?
A Lewis gun had a drum which clicked onto the... Now, just a minute. Now, that was the Vickers K gun. I think the Lewis gun was belt-fed. It was drum-fed, was it? Lewis gun was drum-fed. As indeed the Vickers K gun was drum-fed. It had a number of rounds in the drum. I think about 100 rounds in the drum. But I never fired the thing.
You said you'd learned the theory of deflection.
Yes.
Can you explain that to me, what that was?
Well, you had to follow the target, estimate how far it was away, and then you had to move the sight along its path to the distance where you think the fire would intercept it, and press the trigger. I mean, I did that ultimately in in reality, but not at the time. I never fired the Lewis gun. I'd never fired a Vickers K gun, because gas operated, not until later stage in the training.
And how many of you have been sent to that specific airfield?
How many were sent to that airfield?
Yeah, from your course.
I think three of us, I think. I can't remember who they were now. But nothing happened to us. After a while, we were pulled out and sent off to elementary flying training.
Was that more to do with the bottleneck in the system?
Oh, yes. I mean, the whole trouble with the RF, it went through a period of... But the real problem was how to train people. There weren't enough instructors, there weren't enough airfields rigged up for training. We had to wait until these became available. That was the whole delay. I mean, we've been in the Air Force for something like 10 months before our practical flying training started.
So what was the next stage then? When you did you got to did you, were you allocated to a flying training?
Yes, I was sent up to RAF Prestwick, which is near Ayr, near Glasgow, between Ayr and Glasgow, and it was equipped with Tiger Moths, and we started flying training. I think there was a different batch of trainees there, not the ones I was at ITW with. I don't quite know why I was sent there. Well, the others might have been sent somewhere else, but I was, that's where I was sent. And we started flying training in Tiger Moths and had various instructors and learned how to take off and land and spin and roll and so on.
Can I take you through that a little bit in more in detail, if that's possible?
Yeah, sure.
What was the airfield like up there? Was there any particular characteristics that it had?
The airfield had no runway. It was a grass airfield, and it wasn't the sort of airfield it later became, with proper metalled runways and so on. We only flew during the day. There were certain other lessons that went on apart from that, but the most interesting part was the flying. But I wasn't at it for very long. There was an acute shortage of air navigators, and what they wanted was to rush people through the air navigation side, which was quicker than the piloting side, so that they could send navigators to squadrons to relieve the second pilot, who occupied the position as navigator, and he could become a first pilot, and that would increase the aircrew capacity on squadrons. And had I volunteered to be an air observer to begin with, it was an air observer in those days, there's no doubt that my training would have been far quicker. It was more academic. I had always excelled on the ground subject side, and they wanted me to transfer onto air observer. Although I did go solo, they said that I could be an air observer, I would probably be commissioned, and I could be a pilot later on. And I said, all right, well, I better do it. It had occurred to me that that side of my activities was one at which I was good. I probably would have been an indifferent pilot, I'm not sure. I didn't go that far. And for that reason, I was switched onto the air navigation side at the same station and rushed through at great speed. It was flying training again on Anson's, both by night and day. And again, I did very well with that. I also became, partly from my initial training, very interested in astronavigation. That aspect of things appealed to me a great deal, and the use of a sextant is something which even now I think I could cope with. But I probably was slightly more academic than the other people on the pilot training, and they wanted me to do this. And after I'd had my arm twisted a bit, I did. They said I could carry on as a pilot if I wanted, but they would like me to be an air navigator.
Can you tell me about that flying training, though, that you did with the Tiger Moth? What was it? Can you describe, firstly, what the Tiger Moth was like?
Well, it was a two-seater aircraft, high-wing monoplane, very low, short takeoff and landing. The controls were quite simple. There was a dashboard, a joystick, of course, and a throttle, and it was mostly a question of handling the machine. It wasn't a very complicated machine at all. The instructor was in the front, you were in the back. He told you what you wanted to do and what he wanted me to do, and I did them. The most important aspect of it all was takeoff and landing. The takeoff was easy. Landing needed more judgment. And you needed to get exactly the right height off the ground before you pulled the throttles back and sank gently onto the ground rather than hitting it with a great bump. And so I did that okay, I suppose. But
with a flight like that, how would you take off? What's the procedure for taking off in the time?
Well, you'd have to get to the end of the airfield and turn into wind, push the throttles forward gradually, increase speed, push the stick forward so the tail came up, and then gently ease it back and increase speed and get up in the air and start circling round.
And would you do circuits and bumps around the airfield?
Oh yes, there's almost entirely circuits and bumps. But I can remember doing spins, and I can remember being near Ayers Rock. Ayers Rock is in the Firth up there, and there's this conical shaped thing, and I can remember doing the spin and seeing Ayers Rock going round and round underneath me and moving down towards it, and then applying opposite rudder and forward stick and so on, and then coming after the spin so I didn't crash into Ayers Rock.
To non-flyers, the spin seems quite a threatening move. How did they explain that to you? Did they put you into a spin first?
Well, they explained on the ground what you had to do, how you had to handle the controls, then took you up and you had to do it. But I think those who showed any sign of panic were taken off the course. I didn't have any panic at all. I may not have been all that good, but I certainly didn't panic.
Having said that, you were interested in being a pilot. How did you take to the experience of flying?
Oh, I liked it. But at the same time, I was extremely patriotic. And being told that I ought to be a navigator or an air observer, if that was what they wanted me to be, I thought I ought to be it and come back onto the piloting side later on.
And you say that stage, was that the changing nature of the war at that stage? They were discovering the more...
Oh, yes. There was indeed. And, of course, I was worried about my parents. I know that sounds a strange thing, but they were in London. My father worked in the city. I was worried about the bombing that went on. Of course, the Battle of Britain was on at this time, and things were a bit fraught. And I thought it was my duty to do whatever they wanted me to do. I can certainly remember being extremely worried about my parents back home and my two younger brothers who were at home.
Had they followed your academic record within the service? Had they chosen yourself and other people to do that because of the success you'd had with the ground subject, do you think?
I think it must have been the case. My academic record at school was pretty good, and certainly my prowess on the ground subjects and on the theoretical side was much higher than average, and this must have gone on my record, must have done. And they knew about this. They must have looked at all this. And they must have picked out those people they thought could... The air navigation side was somewhat more academic than the pilot side. And they wanted people who showed that type of ability to move on to it. And it was true that when I did get on to the air observer side, that the chaps who were on it were were more academic than the pilots themselves. And I suppose I was one of them.
How much pressure did they bring to bear to change, to get you to change, or was there no pressure? Did you?
It was fairly gentle. They said they wanted me to do it. If I wanted another chance to carry on with the flying side, I could have it. But they thought that I would make a commissioned air navigator. That, I must confess, was something attractive, because at the end of the training, you either became a sergeant pilot or you became an officer pilot. But the thought that I would become an officer as an air navigator was to some extent attractive. I mean, I knew it was almost certain that I would become a pilot officer air navigator and could then switch back to being a pilot if I wanted. That was, I must confess, to some extent an attraction for me. But I also did realise that I had some sort of ability on the side of meteorology, for example. I was good on meteorology. That was one of the subjects, incidentally, that I had to study. And astronavigation. I mean, I learnt how to identify the stars and the planets and the positions of the sun and moon, and was interested in them. I was interested in the constellations.
To what degree, with both of those, meteorology and astronavigation, when you studied to that point, what did you have to know, say, for meteorology? What kind of detail?
In meteorology, I had to know what all the cloud formations were, the cumulus, cumulonimbus, stratus, so on and so forth, what the difference between fog and mist and so on, and all that sort of aspect of things, and all forms of precipitation, question of air pressure and all that sort of business. I had to learn that, and again, I liked it. I liked meteorology. I liked having to study the heavens. I liked having to learn all the constellations, and did learn them. I used to go out at night, I remember, if it was clear, and study all the constellations. So I became a trainee air navigator or air observer.